Hello and welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I am joined by Father Angelo Geiger from the Franciscan Friars of the Immaculate here in Griswold. Thank you for joining me today, Father. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the culture of life. And as pro-lifers, I think that's really our ultimate goal, is to have a culture in which every life is embraced and cherished. And so what is your spin on the culture of life, and how do we get to that point?
Well, I think the person that made the term famous, if not coined it, was John Paul II. And he chose to talk about the values of life and the things that we fight for in the pro-life movement by speaking about the culture of life or the gospel of life, rather than calling it the pro-life movement. And I think that's because he had a broader vision than simply addressing a number of critical issues that have to do with the value of human life and beginning of life and end of life decisions and issues. And the reason is, I believe, because what we're seeing now in terms of abortion and euthanasia and same-sex marriage and the rationing of health care and stuff like that,
contraception
is an effect of something very deep in the human heart. And culture, speaking about a culture, touches upon the origin of these problems. Because really, a culture is a moral environment, mm-hmm. really. We talk about agriculture. The idea comes from the Latin root that refers to a rule, so that agriculture is the submitting of the fields to a rule. You tame the fields, and you submit the fields to a rule, and the kind of rule that you submit it to bears fruit. And if you submit it to just a haphazard kind of rule, you won't get the fruit you're looking for. You get weeds and stuff like that. So there, no matter what we have in the world, we always have a culture. And if the culture is good, it'll bear good fruit. If it's not good, it'll bear bad mm-hmm. fruit. And the problem is, both the problem and the beauty of it is that we're a product of the culture. Even if we're reacting against the culture, we're
right.
still influenced by it. We're children of the culture in which we live. So the culture does have a tremendous impact on those who live within it, because it is the air we breathe. Mm-hmm. It's the moral environment in which we live.
So the rules we follow.
Yeah, the rules we follow. The rules that we create for ourselves are what form us, mm-hmm. and yet we're the ones that make the rules.
Right.
So if we establish for ourselves a set of rules that do produce good fruit, then good fruit will be better people, mm-hmm. and we'll live the rules better. On the other hand, if we have poor rules, bad rules, the fruit will be an unconverted heart in the end. And at the root of the whole pro-life movement is this need for conversion, this need for a humble heart, mm-hmm. and the recognition that the choices that we make matter for everyone else. And that ultimately we must have a commitment to the common good. And I think this is what the Holy Father was talking about. He was talking about this common patrimony that we all have, that we're all responsible for, that we all produce, and that we're all affected by. And it's not just, I say just, it's really not a question of just, but it's not only about abortion and birth control or even a contraception. It's about a way of life in
right.
the end.
I mean, when you think about it, it's true. Being pro-life, we can see all of the attacks and the things that have popped up that our culture has allowed, and starting with taking prayer out of school and contraception, abortion, in vitro fertilization, you name it. As we keep going, we're heading towards euthanasia and healthcare rationing and just demeaning, life in general. And it would be so much easier to fight these things if our culture would never have allowed any of this stuff to begin with. You know, it's like the fruit, you're right, the field was set, and then all of these weeds popped up, and it's hard to get rid of them. So how do we get back to a culture where these things are unthinkable?
Well, I believe pro-lifers, first of all, have to understand that their spiritual life has to come first. That it has to be about our own conversion before anything else, and our own willingness to cooperate with God, and to be open-hearted in that regard, because this is something that it is absolutely essential that we teach others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't. I think sometimes like say, people who are pro-life and generally are more or less conservative in terms of values and their value systems, will still make a number of compromises with the ways of the world, because it just seems that's the way we're going to contact
right.
people. And, you know, there's always a question of how far we should bend in order to communicate with the world in which we live. But at the same time, before anything else, we need to be seeking our own salvation
right.
and the salvation of our kids and our families and trying to make better judgments, you know. And if we are willing to challenge the status quo in terms of what the government is doing or what is being done in the schools, we have to challenge the status quo of our own lives.
Right.
And you know, we do need that conversion. Prayer in schools would be good, but what about, you know, prayer in the home and sitting down as a family and having a meal together, or you know, making sure that we put family prayer first in our homes. That's why the pro-life movement needs to be more than a political or social action type of group. It truly needs to be a work of prayer and sacrifice, and we need to help teach each other how to be generous, you know, in terms of our commitment, as I say again, to the common good. We need to learn more and more how to, you know, put others first,
mm-hmm.
which is ultimately the Christian message. It's not about me. It's about God and my family or those for whom I'm responsible.
Right. I mean, it sounds
and
like
that's
being
what,
a parent.
Yeah, and that's what is at the heart of the culture of death. It's a me-oriented
a
culture.
Absolutely.
In which people become disposable because they're inconvenient
mm-hmm.
to me. They cost
mm-hmm.
too much. They take too much time.
Right.
I'm not prepared. Not ready for it. It's not my time in life. It wasn't my choice. All these types of things are depersonalizing.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like I know that Pope John Paul II talked a lot about the family as being the, you know, the building block of society, and it just sounds like that's tied into all of that, and that you have to have, you know, culture.
Yeah, because
it starts in the families.
Right, because ultimately a culture of life is family life. It, you know, if there's going to be a rule by which we govern the society in which we live, it has to be a rule which is beneficial, first of all, to the human person, the dignity of each and every human person, and then to the cultivation of a wholesome and free
mm-hmm.
family.
It sounds, as you're speaking, I can just see so many things in our culture that need to be addressed, that would just help go along with this. You know, it sounds old-fashioned and everything, but you know, the mothers need to be with the kids, and they
sure.
need to be able to stay at home and raise their children. But even after the children are gone, women used to be the volunteers. They used to be, you know, the candy stripers. They used to go to the hospitals
sure.
and volunteer and go to the retirement homes and help, you know, they used to take care of their elderly family, you know, relatives. We need, I think we need to get back towards a culture where women are available to do all those things, you know, to help spread the love and you know, support, you know, people in the not just the beginning stages of life with their children, but with the elderly in the later stages of life. And if our culture could, you know, support that, I think we'd have.
That's
a lot
what I
of
mean.
Problems.
People need to change their way of life and their way of thinking. I mean, we think in terms of progress always being more and better technology and bigger and more global, and we don't always examine the consequences of the choices we seem to adopt or sometimes which are more or less imposed on us either by government or by global business, and we end up getting sucked in, you know,
right.
And we become less of a family and less personal contact, less direct contact, less responsible for the people around us.
I mean, it's so funny because, as you say, the technology, you know, look at all the time that a dishwasher was going to save a woman and all the time that all these things, you know, the microwave. But women have less time now to be with their kids than they ever have, even though they don't have to beat their clothes on the stone in the in the creek, and they don't have to haul water, you know, 2 miles.
Yeah.
It's like we have all these conveniences.
Conveniences has given us the opportunity to do more, and I think people are more or less drowned in the more. You know, they don't
wrong more.
Yeah,
when we should be spending.
Which, by the way, is the definition of the. Of the vice of sloth or sloth, depending on what part of the country you're from, but it's really not laziness. Sloth doesn't mean laziness. It means not applying ourselves to the things that really matter. And I think in a world in which we have a lot of, I mean, the world's always been difficult to live in. But I mean, the more problems we have, and the more emotional and psychological crises we face, the more tempted we are to escape into things that are either secondary or even ephemeral, that really don't matter.
Right.
And I think of the amount of time that people spend, you know, on useless emails
or from the television.
More and more, it's the internet, though. Now, so much. Not that the internet's bad or technology is bad. I'm not saying that at all. We use technology. We're doing this. We have the internet. You know, we blog.
Television's not bad either.
We blog. No, I'm saying we do all this, but we really do need to examine our values. You
right.
know? And if we are really pro-life, and this is part of the problem is that a lot of those who would identify themselves as being pro-life, in the end, you know, don't have the will to change the culture.
Right.
Even the will to vote for a pro-life president.
Right.
So, I mean, how are we going to change the culture if we really don't even have the will to put the right people in office to minimize the Holocaust?
Mm-hmm. As you were speaking before, you were saying, you know, people really need to get more spiritually attuned and more prayerful. And one of the first steps, I think, that as a nation, I really believe, as you're speaking, that it just seems to fall in place, is the 40 Days for Life. It's a prayer vigil. It's 40 days of, you know, prayer and fasting. And I think that's so important to, you know, to marry or, you know, join your prayer with the fast. And sacrifice and show that, you know, just start that love is sacrifice. Love is not, you know, the sexual love that people think it is. You know, it's sacrifice. It's helping each other. It's like you said, putting others before yourself. And that is a pro-life vigil that bears witness against abortion in front of Planned Parenthood and other crisis pregnancy centers, but we need to live that on beyond the 40 Days for Life and like you say, kind of bring it into the homes.
Yeah, you mentioned true love, charity, we would call it in theology, but true love really is a miraculous power, and that's really what we need in the pro-life movement, or to find and sustain a culture of life, is we need a miracle in the face of selfishness and death and the culture of death, because people have been enculturated into the moral environment of contraception, the selfishness of contraception, and a disposable society in which persons are disposable. And once that has become the norm, it's very difficult to change the way people
it
think.
Is. I mean,
so we're really trying to argue that it's really better for you to be pro-life. And yet, you know, what in the end, people want to eat, steak and eggs, or they want to eat, cereal and yogurt. I mean, people still have a taste for what they like, and if it's based upon selfishness, they're going to follow, in the end, what is more convenient.
Yeah.
So people have to be willing to give up their conveniences, and the only thing that's going to do that is real love, and that comes from Christ, and that comes from a change of heart. That's the only ultimate way that it's going to happen. To believe in that power. I think that was one of the messages of the Holy Father was be not afraid. That love is creative and death is not. And mm-hmm. and we have to believe in the power, and the miraculous power even, of supernatural charity.
And I mean, just see the disaster that the culture of death has brought upon us. You know, you're saying people are disposable, and it's not just the aborted babies, and it's not just the elderly, but I mean, husbands and wives. I mean, look at the divorce rate. I mean, people are literally disposing of their spouses, and in the wake of all of this disaster are the children. Divorce is so bad on the children that my father-in-law is 70 years old, and his parents got divorced when he was 12, and he still hasn't gotten over it. It's that bad and that destructive,
and it's beyond that. You have so many children born outside of wedlock without a father in the home, or who end up getting tossed around to three or four fathers over a period of time.
Or have brothers and sisters with, how many different
parents? No, but what I'm, yeah, that's
parents.
True. That's true, but I'm saying that you have kids that grow up with someone they get attached to, and
yeah.
then they're deprived of that person, they get attached to someone else. And, it's become part of
right.
the culture. So we deem that, to be more or less acceptable, and the collateral damage is managed in some sense. The parent that's there for them tries to make up for that,
mm-hmm.
but it is a culture of selfishness, which is
all right.
which we've accommodated. We've said, well, this is just the way things are, and then we can't move beyond it.
Yeah.
And that's part of the lack of moral fortitude and lack of will on the part of so many people to do something about the Holocaust.
Yeah.
I mean, if just the people who consider themselves Christian, Catholic, were just to unite on this one issue, we could change things.
Right.
But
right.
but it's getting the will, just the will to do something on these issues. But that means a will to change the way we live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then put other issues on the back burner.
Sure.
And that might seem really important, but they are obviously less important in the long run. Like you're saying, you have to learn to sacrifice and put others before yourself, and that's what parents used to do. People have always had conflicts in marriage. I mean, marriage is a hard life to live, but they used to, quote unquote, stay together for the kids, and just that sacrifice was so much better for not just, the children, but for society in general, because, people knew that was the building block of society. It was the mother, father, and children. And now we've lost, it's such a gamish now that we've lost all cultural identity of, yeah, of that.
And it's difficult to find the way out or the way back. But there is a hope there too, I think, is that in the light of the things that have happened over the last 40 years, we do have the ability to move forward, even to a point, to something that's better than what we had before. Maybe it might take a long time, but I think we've also learned from mistakes. You know, as much as the feminist movement, I think, has been a disaster, the idea that women have equal dignity and that there are things that we've done in the past that we can move beyond. Also, I think of for example, the stigma that has been attached to divorced people or especially the children of divorced people in the past. A lot of people suffered from that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people suffered from that particular stigma who didn't do anything. You know,
right.
They were just trying to live their life. I think we've learned that this, or women who lost their virginity before marriage or were pregnant before marriage. So I think in that sense, we have the ability to be
more loving.
Yeah, and compassionate towards the weak, of whom
we all are
members, you know, one way or another. God sees the heart. We see the outside, but God sees what's inside, and it's not always what we think. So we even have the possibility of going forward, but we have to have the will to do it. And that's why also the Holy Father talked about the gospel of life, because it really is. It is good news, but it's also a matter of revelation. Mm-hmm. It's something that God has revealed to us. It's a path that we have to follow, and we have to be open to following that path.
That's a simple read. Simple read.
It
Everybody
is a simple
should read,
but
the
it,
gospel of life.
But it's also a question of having the humility to recognize that we don't have all the answers.
Right.
And that we have to seek first the kingdom of God, and then everything else will, in fact, be added unto us. You know. At the heart of a lot of it is pride.
I was just going to say that because the humility is the beautiful part of love. I mean that is what you know. It all breaks down to is people have to be more humble, and had we not been so judgmental of people, like you said, of you know, children of divorced families, or putting the scarlet letter on the adulterous, you know, things like that. If we had been more loving and reacted differently in those situations. You know, the people that, you know, say that, of course, people who promoted abortion said, well, you know, these women have no choice because, you know, people have such a negative connotation to women who have a child out of wedlock, you know, they have to have an abortion, they have to have that, otherwise, you know, they'll be, you know, deemed social outcasts, which, of course, that is not true today, so they have no excuse to have an abortion because of that.
Yeah.
But if that's one thing that we learn from this, like you said, the Holocaust, that.
Well, I think John Paul II, you know, he's known as a personalist, and the idea there is that you know, the consideration of the human person and the dignity of the human person, and having a regard for where the person is and trying to approach their real concrete needs, and that. Promoting the faith and being true to the faith and not bending on the point on the point of doctrine, etc., you know, not allowing ourselves to adulterate the faith, doesn't really militate against that mandate to treat people with dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of the message of John Paul's gospel of life, I believe.
And I think everybody could, you know, learn a lot just by reading it. It's a very small encyclical, well, it's large, but from the encyclical, but it's beautiful, and it's something that you can read over and over again and study. And I know that there's a Gospel of Life Society that does just that. They meet once a month to pray and then discuss, you know, parts of the Gospel of Life. And I think that's one really good step, you know, towards being more humble and trying to infuse the culture of life back into the United States.
Yeah, we certainly need it. The other thing is Marian devotions. John Paul II made that a hallmark of his pontificate. And in the end, if we're to discover what family life is and what the value of human life is, then we need to look at the relationship with the Holy Family.
Sure.
Our Lord himself has given us the example. You know, it's the primacy of life. The gospel is about life. It's about eternal life. And every soul is created directly by God. You know, we man and woman collaborate in the creation of a new person, but the soul is created directly by God immediately, and is known by God from all eternity. And each person is unique, and loved, and irreplaceable, and called out of nothingness into eternal life. And that is ultimately our destiny. And that should really ultimately drive the way we think, and the way we act, the things that we do, the choices that we make.
Yeah. It's so wonderful that you bring up Mary, because she is the ultimate role model, you know, for every woman, as being the humble mother. You know, I mean, she's the greatest woman who ever lived, and yet she was just a mother. You know, so
well, just a mother is, you know, is really no. It's kind of, I mean, there's no. I mean, just a mother. I mean, she is the one who nurtures life. A mother, you know, she's the one who receives and nurtures it and hands it on.
And that's what we need to promote.
Absolutely.
Is motherhood. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us. We hope that you've learned something. Join in the 40 Days for Life that's coming up, because maybe that will be kickstart your prayer life and also help you to connect with some really good pro-life people. And then take that prayer life into your family and spread it to your friends. When you look in the mirror the next time, you realize yours too is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.